Welcome along, a bonus little podcast that we're recording on the sly in a secret location. We were asked to record a podcast about signing players, about the process of identifying players, particularly with Spain in mind, because that's Terry's area of expertise. Take us back in time. We'll update the process, obviously. We'll talk about what happens now. But when, after you'd finished playing and coaching, you became a scout. Why Spain? Just because you liked it, and how did that process work when you first started?
I was in the awkwarder but favourable position of being coach for Northern Ireland, which was a part time basis. So that was 10 games a season, where you get together as we see now with the national teams. Nothing's changed on that part, and then trying to find another role in football that would allow me that opportunity to disappear basically for 10 days, 12, 14 days at a time to go and work with Northern Ireland. Mm-hmm. That was something I really wanted to do. The opportunity to work at senior international level was, it hadn't been an ambition of mine. It hadn't been something I thought about. But my colleague, Laurie Sanchez, became manager of Northern Ireland and asked me to join him. And so I had to come up with a solution where I could still work involved in football. And I did hear that one or two clubs were venturing into looking at permanent scouts based abroad. This is back to 2004. And one of those clubs was where the manager was an old friend of mine, was Bolton Wanderers, who at the time were flying high in the Premier League, had a list of illustrious names, far different world from where they are now. Mm-hmm. Fernando Hierro and JJ Okocha and Ivan Campo were part of the team at Bolton. And Sam Allardyce was looking for scouts to base themselves abroad. He already had one in France, so the idea came up that I would go and base myself in Spain. It was down to me where I chose. Of course, I chose the south of Spain.
Yeah, good choice.
Costa del Sol, which allowed me at that time to concentrate mainly on watching Malaga, Sevilla, Betis. When I say concentrate on those three, it meant I could go to their home games every week. So yeah. I had a choice of three teams a week where I could get to. Malaga was local. Sevilla, Betis in the city of Sevilla was a two-hour drive away. I ventured up to Almeria. There was numerous other smaller clubs that I ventured to as well that weren't in La Liga. But I was that's the part of the world I was based in. And my job was to recommend any players to Bolton Wanderers, do weekly match reports on every game that I went to and each player. And then after a season where it was amicable, but I wasn't getting much feedback in terms of... Right. What Bolton were looking for, how interested they were in La Liga. And then another old colleague of mine, teammate of mine from Coventry City as well, Stuart Pearce, got the Manchester City job. And this was the Man City before they had money.
Yeah.
And Stuart was, I sensed, more enthusiastic. And I thought there was a possibility there that they might be a little bit more keen on venturing into the La Liga market, which was the case, actually. I think that Stuart came out on two or three occasions after managing the team on a Saturday, got a flight out to where I was, joined me in Seville, joined me in Malaga, and watched the game on a Sunday afternoon and went straight back to Manchester. So there was more feedback from Stuart Manchester City. So I did that for two or three years while I was still combining coaching with Northern Ireland. So it worked to a degree. As I say, it was a different Manchester City. They didn't have the money. It was Stuart came out to watch a player called Chengi Morales from Malaga. He was a big 6'5" centre-forward. Would have cost very little in terms of a transfer, very, very little in terms of a fee. Far removed from... he was an Uruguayan big centre-forward. There was a handful. Far removed from buying Sergio Aguero and David Silva and people like that. But I did recommend some players that further down the line that Manchester City followed up on. And that was with Derek Fazakerley, who stayed after Stuart left and Sven was there. And in that time, they signed Pablo Zabaleta from Espanyol for about £5 million, I think. And Martin Petrov was the other one that I recommended that they continue to follow up after I left them and went to become coach at Fulham. So there was a procedure at Manchester City, as I say, far removed from the millions and millions that they're spending now. But it was... you know, they were a bit more conscientious than say Bolton, who were looking into the market, a different market than Manchester City. Man City were looking for value, and at that time it was in La Liga, the value was there.
So we hear stories all the time, ever since Moneyball became a thing, that clubs are doing a load of work, that they've got these extensive databases on every player. So when a player is signed, how many times is a player watched? How extensive is it? Say when Fornals recently went to West Ham. How many times? Obviously, Pellegrini would have known him anyway.
I think the director of football at West Ham is from ex-director of football at Malaga, so that helps. Yeah. Anything like that is a big help because you not only get to know the player, you know the person as well that you're signing. It depends. Every club is different. Every club has young people at the club that are IT specialists that collate all the evidence in the world that you need in terms of statistics on every player. It was different. I actually had a really good experience where I went as part of my pro license. You had to spend some time at a club. I was based in Spain, so I knew an agent in Spain that introduced me to Munchie, the director of football. And I wanted to do, rather than do a technical analysis, I wanted to study the art of recruitment, because at that time Munchie was king. He was buying players for next to nothing, selling them for huge money, and producing as a director of football a team that was winning trophies. So I went and watched them and spent some time shadowing him, and then shadowing his assistant. And it was so primitive, it was ridiculous, but so thorough and detailed. They knew every player, but it was in the head. It wasn't on the computer.
Right. Yeah.
So they had six people that worked in a classroom, ex-players who all played over 100 appearances. That was a criteria for them to be a scout for Sevilla. And they had a system where they went up and watched games every weekend. They swapped countries where they went to. They had a classroom with, I would say, probably 10 televisions in. Not flat screens. These were old-fashioned televisions hooked up to probably every illegal satellite system you could find that would allow them to watch Brazilian League. This is over a decade ago. So we weren't able to stream everything. They were doing it somehow. And they would then go off to watch a game in a different country, armed with a pack of DVDs to watch in their spare time on the fly, on the drive if they were getting picked up and taken to a game in the hotel room, of ones that the other five scouts had watched.
Yeah.
So they all formed an opinion on a player. So that was one club's routine. Other clubs, I'm sure it's moved on. A lot of it is, as I say, is based on the computer. There's tools now called Y-Scout, where if I speak to a club, I can tell them about a player within an hour that someone will put together a 20-minute clip of highlights, lowlights, that sort of packages. So,
how good is that compared to your expert eye?
Nowhere near it.
Right.
No, because I've found in the past, and I've worked for a number of clubs as a La Liga consultant, I still am. It's very frustrating that nothing much really happens, if I'm being honest. I think my biggest asset has been stopping them spending money on players that they shouldn't be spending big money on. That's happened more than actual clubs buying a player that I've recommended. So, for instance, I was asked about a player. Actually, funny enough, before I went to Fulham, they were interested in a player from Atletico Madrid, and his CV looked great. He was an international player. I don't want to name the player because I don't want to be personal and critical, but he was going to cost a lot of money. And I said, no, my opinion, I didn't think he was worth it. And they were on the verge of doing this big money deal, £20 million or something. And this was 2003.
Yeah.
You imagine the size of that deal for Fulham back then. I said to them, just come and watch. So I actually flew up to Madrid with their scout. We watched the game, and he totally agreed with me. But they were on the verge of watching him, just based on the agent pushing the player, the CV of the player, which was impressive. But in the cold light of day, when they actually saw him play, the things that I'd spoken to them about, so that saved them £20 million. And that's happened more than clubs actually taking my opinion and spending money.
How formal is the process? How formal is your relationship with the club? Because you're a player and coach, so you know people, and is it the case from the clubs you worked at, it's generally, is it people that you've known and met when you were a player? Yeah. Is it that kind of networking? So
yes.
That's quite informal.
Yes, process, it is. Yeah. And they trust me to come up with the right players, to give them the information that I think they should know, and then hopefully they act on it. What I have to understand is, and it is frustrating, because I see players that I think clubs should be buying. I see players that clubs in the end do buy, but two or three moves, transfers, after they should have done them. Azpilicueta was a good example. He went from... I knew he was going to be a good player at Osasuna when he broke into Osasuna. Monreal was the other fullback. You both knew they were going to be... You didn't. It's not rocket science to go, he's good, he's good. Watch him a few times. If you watch a player too many times, you start finding fault.
Yeah.
But you do get a bigger picture. Rather than going to watch... The amount of times I've spoke to agents who have been to watch a player who I don't think is particularly good or suitable... But he might have the game of his life, and in that one game, an agent is—that's it. Their opinion is formed. The following week, they're going off to watch a game in France, going off to watch a game in Germany. They might not get around to watching that player again that season. So it is. It's. I think they rely on someone who knows the league, the players, and watches them on a regular basis and can form an opinion over a longer general period, as opposed to they might come and watch a player who they don't like in one game, and that's it. That's the end of that. Yeah. Any possibility of that transfer happening, I have to then convince them that he's actually better than how he played in that game, come and have another look, which is hard when they're covering so many countries, so many leagues. So I'm a reference, a starting reference point.
Do they cover too many then? Are you better off focusing your fire on a league or two? Clubs have done that, haven't they, where clubs have signed a series. It was Swansea, classically, when Loudrup came.
Yep.
They signed a lot of players from La Liga, and it worked pretty well for them, didn't it,
very
for a while?
Well. Yeah. When you compare what they're doing now on how they did at that time. Yeah, I agree with you. I think specialise in a league rather than try to cover every league. I mean, it is difficult. I could be really critical of the way that the clubs, I think in England, particularly in the Premier League, there's too much money involved, so they can waste money. There's a number of players playing back in La Liga that have ended up being bought by English clubs. Borja Baston, by Swansea, Imbula, who's on loan at Rayo. Borja Baston has been on loan at Malaga, and Alaves, I think he's still got 2 years left on his deal with Swansea. And the clubs in Spain that he's been playing for can't pay the wages he's been paid at Swansea. So that investment of 20 million plus his wages is now being spread over a 4 year period, where they're probably going to run his contract down. Won't get a fee for him, and will be paying a substantial amount of his salary for 3 or 4 years. In Buda's the same at Stoke. Guido Carrillo went from Monaco to Southampton. January 2018. Half a season, and the last season was on loan at Leganés.
Yeah.
So Leganés are not paying the wages that he earns. So it is difficult for clubs to get it right. And it's... I agree with you. I think they should be more specific. But I think they need to be better. I really do think they need to be better. It's very agent-driven. So an agent, if he gets involved in a club and he can make deals happen, the club will favour him. If he recommends players, you'll be surprised how many players are bought on a recommendation of an agent, because he can get the deal done. For clubs, it's so hard to get deals done because... most of the players they go for are in competition with other clubs. So if an agent comes along and actually can do that deal, then you find that clubs are lean towards him, because it's not easy to blow 100 million a year, which the Premier League clubs are quite willing to do. So they tend to favour, you know, rather than pick a player, do the due diligence, work with an agent that they've never used before. And we have to accept the agents have... unrealistic power, I think. They don't own the player. They work for the player, but they do to a degree. They are like the third wheel now, aren't they, in the transfer. It's not club to club player. It's the agent pretty much has control of the player, which makes it difficult. So if a club has a relationship with an agent that he can push deals through, convince the club that they're buying the right players at the right prices, then those clubs favour them, rather than just pick players that they like and see, then trying to get a deal done. You know, it might not be easy to get that deal done. So it frustrates me that clubs in England are willing to, when I was talking about Azpilicueta, they allowed him to go to Marseille first and then Marseille to Chelsea. Now, Chelsea got money, so it doesn't matter. But there's so many of those players that you could... Pablo Fornals is another one. His buyout clause from Malaga to Villarreal was 10 million. Clubs in England I spoke to said, I wish we'd known about that. But they should do. It's their job to know. So now Chelsea, West Ham paying 24 million, which they don't think's bad. Supporters don't think's bad. But they could have been 10 million. Rodri, Atletico Madrid, his buyout clause was 20 million a year ago from VRL. Clubs in England should have dealt. We knew. I'm pretty sure you knew. I knew he was going to be a player, and he was worth the 20 million from VRL. But now it's going to be 60 from Atletico a year later.
In fact, let's have a little break and we'll come back and we'll have a chat about what stops the Premier League clubs being better in the transfer market. Bear with us. Have a listen to the break. Welcome back. We're having a chat about how the transfer system works, the scouting system and all of that. So just before we had the break, Terry, you were saying that the Premier League clubs need to get better at this transfer business. They've obviously got the money to blow everybody else out of the water. So are they just comfortable doing that? Is it literally just a case that they've got so much money that it sort of blocks them being creative almost?
Yeah, and do you know what? Funny, the weirdest aspect of all of this is that they will pay huge sums of money for transfer fees, huge sums of money to the salaries and signing on fees of the players, huge sums of money to the agents, and they pay a pittance to the scouts.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Yeah,
it is really. Yeah. I don't know whether I should disclose. When I was talking about Bolton and Man City earlier, I left to go to Man City. When I say I left to go to Man City, very little contact with the clubs in general, apart from Stuart Pearce coming out. I didn't sort of count myself as being one of the staff that's always at the Etihad or was always at Bolton, the Reebok. I worked for the clubs from a distance. My wages at Bolton were £100 a week, and City offered me double, so it was £200 a week. And that was to cover the whole of Spain.
And it's not that dissimilar now, is it?
No, it isn't.
But the guys with the laptops, who are good at Football Manager, they're paid a proper
full-time salary.
Yeah,
I have no idea what they get paid. When I was at Fulham, there was probably two or three. There's probably 10 now.
Yeah.
The backroom staff at all the clubs has multiplied. When I went to Fulham, it was two or three of those. Two or three masseurs, a doctor, two, half a dozen physiotherapists. The whole thing was getting bigger and bigger. But the one area where they don't pay what should be paid is to scouts. And one of the other problems is, whenever I see one of the scouts that I've known over the years, they're always working for a different club every time you see them.
Yeah, yeah.
So that information goes from with them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Unless
Because they're not treated. This is me kind of standing up for scouts.
Yeah.
They're not treated with the respect they deserve because it's easy to get a better job offer when you're not paid a lot of money.
So presumably, though, the club retains, like the director of football or chief scout or whatever, retains that information.
It's in your head.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. It's in the scout's head.
Yeah.
You can't take that out. There'd be all the paperwork, the backup.
Yeah.
But if you was to ask me about players from Spain, we don't need it written down. We know. So that goes with you. That information goes with you.
And as you said, that's more valuable information than the stuff that's written on Y Scouts or...
I think it's... I mean, ultimately, it's the system as well. In England, it gets a bit messy, doesn't it? From club to club, in who buys the player.
Yeah.
So I think in Spain in general, we've been accustomed over the years. It was new to me when I first got involved over 15 years ago now, watching Spanish football, about the role of the director of football.
Yeah.
And for a number of years in England, I kept telling people, I think it's a good idea because he stays. Hmm. The managers come and go. Players come and go. You need someone with a long-term vision. You need someone with a plan of how the club are going to play, what type of manager they want, what type of coaches they want, how the youth system, the academy, how they're going to break through into the first team. In England, it's very short-termism. It's a manager comes in, brings his own staff in with no control of anybody else at the club. Those coaches will follow him. That might trickle down into like the under 23, the reserve team manager leaving, a new one coming in there to coach the younger players. And then he's there a year or so, he wants to buy his players. No one really knows the direction the club are going in the end, you end up accumulating 30 players that no one knows who's bought them or where the future lies. So I think there are so many issues, and the director of football thing is a must. I really do think that for all those reasons I just suggested. But it's different in England where we don't know if it's the chief executive, we don't know if it's chief scout, we don't know if there's head of recruitment, we don't know the director of football, we don't know how the relationship works with the manager, there's some clubs now that buy purely on stats, don't they? The money ball system. That's how I know of two clubs that's all they do. I did speak to a manager that asked me about players his club was signing, irrespective of what he thought and I thought.
Yeah.
I was speaking to him on the verge of signing, and he was asking me, what is this player like? And this player was signing for
him. So what stats are they looking at then?
I'm not a lover of it. I prefer the old-fashioned way of players, people with knowledge watching. And it's amazing how quick I find myself making an assessment on a player.
Yeah.
I think half a game.
Yeah.
Because I don't look for the obvious things.
Yeah.
I look for the obvious in terms of attributes. You don't look at him and say, I misplaced that pass, he's rubbish. I look for someone. It depends on what the club you're working for are looking for. So you look for a player, if it's a creative midfield player, defensive midfield player, different attributes. If you want a box-to-box midfield player, the first thing you're looking at is he mobile, dynamic? Do you want a big centre-forward, a small centre-forward? Does he have goal-scoring instincts? Do wingers get crosses in? Do they look to get beat the full-backs? Are they tracking back? Are they helping? What's their attitude like? There's so many things you can look for. I don't know how that equates on a system.
Right.
IT system.
So, yeah, I mean, but they obviously think they obviously think they can, don't they? Because you put enough in. I mean, I'm with you. I think it's too dynamic and chaotic a game, I think. Obviously, with baseball and cricket and
stuff,
it works. It's easier, isn't it? Yeah. Games that are more statistical.
I think there's room for it.
Yeah.
But I still think there has to be that element of going to watch someone. I think they're all good tools to have. I'm not slagging them off. I think they're good tools to have, but I think ultimately, whoever's going to buy the player, whether it's the director, football, the manager, then they have to have that final say. They don't just want to give them paperwork about a player. They want to see the player. And ultimately, when you sign players now, it's changed. And every time I signed for a club, I spoke to the manager directly. It was a meeting of, what do you want from me? What do I expect from them?
So, yeah.
You get a glimpse into the manager's ideas in terms of, you're playing at the weekend, if we sign you, this is where you're going to play, this is who you're going to play with. And you want that feedback. Because sometimes, most times now, players sign, they don't have that meeting with a manager.
No, and that's a mistake, isn't
sometimes
it?
Sometimes the clubs haven't even got managers.
Because the players, it's such big money, it's almost like doing a deal for the takeover of a company, isn't it? A small company.
Huge.
But
the investment is huge from a club.
But they are still human beings, aren't they? Because you're not buying a company, are you? You're buying a young man, aren't you?
Yeah,
you
know, so, exactly. And I'm amazed there isn't that contact now between manager and player. That's because it's become so casual now that managers come and go in a short space of time. And it's a sign of perhaps the club don't see the importance of the manager. The players then don't respect the manager as much as they should because...
It's just some guy who's here.
They don't even know it. Yeah, they don't even know if he wants them or not.
Yeah.
It's not that initial personal contact.
So does the manager... does the manager ever not watch a player?
I reckon so, yeah.
Yeah,
a lot of times.
So
he might be given the Y Scout clip.
Yeah.
Might be 20 minutes long.
Yeah.
Half an hour. Might be a game. How conscientious they are. But managers used to go and scout and watch games live.
Yeah.
So that was quite recent. That stopped probably when, I say quite recent, probably Arsene Wenger.
Right, yeah.
Was the first European manager to come in that never...
That didn't go and see them personally.
His job was coaching 18, 20 first team players at Arsenal.
Yeah.
Whereas prior to that, the manager's job was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, annual coaches, where the games, we want them all covered, meeting on a Friday about games the following week where you're all going to go and watch at every level. So that was how it used to be done. So managers now, it's a different world. I'm not going to say it's easier because managers didn't have press conferences every day. The media intensity wasn't, you know, as intense as it is now. But they don't even go much to reserves. A lot of Premier League managers. Their job is only the first team. And most of them come into it knowing it's a short period of time they're going to be working for that club. So how do you expect the club to move forward with organisation if there isn't a great relationship between chairman and manager? players and manager, in terms of the no planning for the long-term future. And what we see now is there's loads of clubs in Spain, Real Madrid, Manchester United, where you accumulate players that through different sets of managers, and no one really takes responsibility for who bought them. And then ultimately the big problem is moving them on.
Yeah. I'm interested in the logistics of a transfer window as well. We've seen this one, obviously Real Madrid got straight in there. You know, it was very decisive, yep. Wasn't it? It spent a lot of money very quickly. Do you need that to happen to unlock the rest? So in terms of, say, the English League, are we waiting for Manchester United, Manchester City, Liverpool to do their business? Does that then unlock money all the way down?
I think that is the case. In the ideal world, if it was me, the only job I would ever go back to football now is to be a director of football. I know, head of recruitment. Yeah. I have plans I would love to put in place, but ultimately, I think it shouldn't be like that.
Right. Yeah.
It shouldn't be like that. If I was a director of football now, I would know probably 10 players that I would like to sign for my manager with an understanding with the manager.
Yeah.
The manager that I've picked that I want to work with, that he agrees. And out of those 10, you might get 3.
Yeah.
But you agreed. And you're going to buy a player that he's going to want to play, not buy a player that he's going to sit on the bench.
Would you want him to...
Because it's a waste of time, waste of money.
Do you want your manager to go and watch the player?
I would love to, yeah.
Yeah.
I would, yeah.
Yeah.
And with the money that's the Premier League clubs, they have a private jet to go. We see Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, didn't we, watching games at the end of last season. Mm. So, you know, he was conscientious enough to go. I think he was watching opponents as opposed to rather than watching direct players. But that's the start. I mean, private jets isn't out the means for the Premier League clubs.
He's spending,
it's not the worst trip in the world.
Yeah, he's spending 70 million on a guy. He's worth doing a bit of work, isn't it?
And if you play on a Saturday and the game's on a Sunday, you can get to...
Yeah.
What's wrong with EasyJet and Ryanair? No, but it is... I mean, Stuart Pearce used to jump on a flight.
Yeah.
I mean, so he didn't have riches then, but it was not an issue for him to fly into Seville, me pick him up from Seville, take him to the game, drop him back at the airport when he went back. So it does need require hard work. There are so many opportunities. I mean, even television now. I mean, you could watch all the leagues in Europe easily now.
Yeah.
And someone could work for a club in England at that training ground, and his job would just be to study that league from Monday to Friday and then go and watch players at the weekend and then come back and watch the rest of the games Monday to Friday. And you get a big picture. I know more about La Liga than the Premier League now, easily, and I've done for years.
Mm.
So why can't clubs have someone like me in Spain, France, Italy, Germany, Belgium, Holland, who lived there, worked there, or watch it all 10 games every week, which is what we do because it's our job. So why can't clubs pay? It doesn't have to be ex-players, but there's a connection there between ex-players being a bit more conscientious. And we live in now a world where most of these big clubs in the Premier League have got ex-players that are Italian, French, German, Spanish, South American, that won't mind the role of scout for that league on a permanent basis, because they have a connection with a club. And you know, if you're Tottenham Hotspur and Ricky Villa is living in Argentina, why can't he? I don't know if he does. Why? I doubt it. Why don't he recommend players from that league to just as a starting point, as a reference? So you cover as much as you can. I don't want to go back on a saying earlier, specialise, but I think if you specialise on the big leagues, and then you could have someone specialising on Holland, Belgium combined. You know, not every player in Holland and Belgium league is worth watching, but there are enough players that come out of those, but they generally play for the best and the bigger teams. So there are ways of doing it. Do we get it right? No. Is there a need for clubs in England, in the Premier League in particular, to get it right? No, because they can lose money doing it.
So last question. So if you see a player coming through at a bottom end La Liga team or mid table La Liga team, what would you do now? You don't have to say the names of the clubs if you want to, if you don't want to, but you know, do you think, hang on, this kid's a bit good? Then you all pick up the phone.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's simple as that.
They in general they don't ask me to fill in a report because they've got people that can study the player.
Yeah.
Paperwork, how many appearances, they go on the same websites that I do to find that information, but then they've got Wyscale, they can put together a clip. After I've told them that's my role done.
Then you, yeah, okay.
I hope, I can remind them.
Yeah.
Which I do.
Yeah.
And hope that eventually they go and watch it. They might turn around and say, that's not a player we're looking for at this moment in time.
Yeah.
Not position or not the type. As I mentioned, all those different players earlier, big striker, small striker, you know, centre-back, one that plays out the back, one that just heads it and clears it, fullbacks that push on, one. It's so many different types of players in the 1 to 11. But if I do persist, I do try to keep them informed and do try to persuade them to take what I tell them serious.
Cool. Well, you'll have to let us know if anyone signs who you've been given the nod to.
Yeah, I've recommended Messi, both Ronaldo's and Zidane so far. Over the past few years.
Yeah, see.
They all turned out to be decent.
Yeah, someone could have had them, didn't they? Someone could have been first to them.
Do you know what? There are people that are like that. I do read loads of scouts. Oh, could have signed him. And managers, we could have signed him. Well, why didn't you?
Right, well, we hope you enjoyed it. That's a little transfer system special. We'll be back with the regular podcasts, with the transfers that are happening, and then obviously looking ahead to the new season and all of that soon. So, yeah, keep with us. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.